Toucher and Rich.
Wake up.
On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
If you're ready for this,
say you're ready for this.
If you're ready for this,
say you're ready for this.
Are you ready for this?
We're ready for this.
Are you ready for this?
We're ready for this.
What we just can't miss. What we just can't miss.
With a beat like this.
It's the joint.
98.5, the Sports Hub. We are Toucher and Rich. And the floor is yours.
Yes. Troy Brown is somebody that every time he's in studio, we have a blast with the guy. There's a side of him that I don't think he gets to put out there when he's doing just kind of X's and O's over on NBCSN. And he feels comfortable in the studio with us. And some of his stories have been fantastic. And he's a guy I think that the future we're going to have in the studio more often. But we did do a game with him. We had him sit with us. And so are you guys ready for our new game?
Yes, John, this is on you. You are the contestant.
Are you guys ready?
Okay.
All right, take it away, Troy Brown.
Hey, this is Super Bowl champion Troy Brown.
Touchdown!
I love weird 80s mod rock. So today, I am Troy George. Gnarly.
I never knew what they were saying there.
I had no idea.
Why the hell are they saying red, gold, and green?
I have no idea.
They're just never going to look at Brown highlights the same way again after this.
I know Josh over at NBCSN has a Photoshop of Troy Brown wearing his very sensible pink sweater and
the Boy George hat.
Okay.
Dan has a good point. He looks like he's in Aldebarge.
I mean, it's a good call. That's right.
You could tell me that he was in Aldebarge. I would believe that.
All right, so to the beat of the rhythm of the night.
Is that Aldebarge?
Me too.
That's from The Last Dragon?
Oh, yeah.
Of course it was, yes.
And the video for that was surrounded by the Last Dragon, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Are you the baddest? Show enough.
That's right.
All right, so here's how it's going to work. You are going to have to identify the artist in which Troy George, Troy Brown's alter ego, his 80s-loving alter ego, the artist that he is doing the lyrics of. Okay, John? All right. Okay. Now, I know that this is obviously your wheelhouse. You were 40 in the 80s.
Mod rock.
This is maybe a little bit after your time.
Yeah.
That's right.
I'm more Saturday Night Fever.
Yeah.
John was very into disco.
Talk to me about Open Sesame and Cool in the Gang. Then we can talk.
Open Sesame?
Yeah. Open Sesame.
Now, this is like, you know, Fish Heads or Dr. Demento songs.
I was all into that. I wasn't into this. All right. Let's see what we can do.
All right. Let's start with song number one. Take it away, Troy Brown.
Is it too shy?
Okay.
We're going Kajagoogoo.
Oh, John Wallach, yes, sir.
Hey, girl. Is it too shy?
Crystal Pepsi.
Correct, you got it.
All right. Again, these lyrics I never knew. Mm-hmm. Hush, hush, eye to eye. I never knew what they were saying.
Yeah. Troy George.
That's right. That is Troy George.
Everything that's popping up is Silver Spoons.
Yes, it is.
Just keep thinking of the
Crystal
train.
Pepsi.
All right.
Wow.
Very good. So you got the first one.
Okay.
Name the artist that Troy George is performing here.
I'm a deus.
Okay.
Is that Falco?
That is Falco.
Oh, yeah. My goodness, it is Falco.
I'm a deus.
That's right, it is Falco.
I'm a deus. Oh, I'm a deus. Come on and rock me, I'm a deus. Oh, I'm a deus. Come on and rock me, I'm a deus.
By the way, that was a song that people played on the radio.
I think
70% of it's like in German, isn't it?
Yes.
They played a lot of German songs. 99 Luftballons.
Right.
Then they had the
Kommissar.
Yeah, Der Kommissar.
There were two of them. Falco did one, and After the Fire did the other in English.
I believe so.
Yes.
There you go, Falco. Crossing all kinds of languages.
Sure. By the way, see if you can guess which ones he's heard of and which ones he's never heard before in his life. Okay, you can pretty much tell by the
Falco
way.
Falco has to be dead, correct?
He's got to be.
You can't live that
Falco
fast.
Falco has to be dead.
You can't live that fast.
I wouldn't think so. Yeah, I would
Boy George.
Yes, I believe he is dead. But Boy George is alive, right?
Yes.
Okay, I think he is alive. All right, which artist is Troy Brown, a.k.a. his 80s alter ego, Troy George, performing here?
Come on, Eileen. Oh, I swear what he means. At this moment, you mean everything.
I don't think he's ever heard that one.
No, I'm fairly certain you're right.
I obviously
about that.
Know the song, but again, these lyrics.
Dexy's Midnight Runners.
Oh, John Waller.
Come on, Eileen. Oh, I swear what he means. At this moment.
John, was there a point in your life where you adopted the overalls and ragtag?
No, with the rolled up cuffs, I never did that with the shoes.
You knew that they were going to be around forever.
I know,
right?
When you saw their whole steez was that they were going to wear overalls and like put like suit on their face.
He did it before Sinbad ever did.
So that's right.
He was a groundbreaker.
Troy George.
Yeah, like that was never going to get old.
Probably not.
What do you want to be? We're going to be like old hobos.
You're going to play in Nebraska. Well, I might want to put a sweater on. I don't think the overalls with no shirt on is going to work. All right, so which artist is Troy Brown, a.k.a. his 80s alter ego, Troy George, performing here?
Take on me, take on me. Take on me.
How can you go through life not hearing that song?
It's one of the biggest songs of that era.
That would be Aha, Rich.
Take on me. Take on me. Take me. Take on me. I'll be gone in a day or two.
I was wondering if he was really going to try and stick the high note there.
No, he copped out on that one. Because he didn't know there was a high note.
I know.
He's never heard that song
before he was born.
In his life.
Troy George.
There's some where he's like, oh, yeah, that's my jam. But that's not one of them.
No.
I don't know how you can go through life without having heard that song. Some incarnation.
You would think so. Okay, so which 80s song is Troy Brown, a.k.a. Troy George, performing here? Which artist, John Wallach? Here we go.
I'm walking on sunshine, whoa, I'm walking on sunshine, whoa.
Katrina and the Waves.
Oh, John Wallach.
Michael J. Fox movie, Secret of My Success.
I'm walking on sunshine, whoa, I'm walking on sunshine, whoa, I'm walking on sunshine, whoa, and don't it feel good?
Take a chill pill.
And don't it feel good? We're A's
Mara. He heard that one.
No, I was just going to say, that one
that
was pretty close.
He walked in there, he's like, walking on sunshine.
Troy George.
That's my jam.
Well, you know, Bill Belichick would have the Secret of My Success running on a loop to inspire the truth.
Now, if he did Night Ranger, I'd really be impressed.
Well, Sister Christian?
That's not a one-off
song.
It's
not Bob Rock either. Yeah. All right, so finally, you're 5 for 5, John Wallach. This is impressive.
All right.
No, it's not. These are easy as hell.
Well, I mean, Falco?
Yes.
Did everyone know Falco?
Yes.
Okay, well, maybe they did. All right.
I mean, we're all old.
what is this final song that Troy Brown, a.k.a. Troy George, is performing here?
Now whip it into shape. Shape it up. Get it straight.
Okay. That's Devo.
Whip it into shape. Shape it up. Get it straight. Go forward. Move ahead. Try to detect it. It's not too late to whip it. Whip it good. Goody to the max.
Okay. Now, he knew that one, and he was psyched to do it.
By the way,
he was psyched to do that one.
I didn't have to adjust one thing on that. Like, that D-Rock's Devo in his car.
Like, it goes Houdini into Devo and his 80s cool mix.
Houdini. He went from 5 minutes of funk and Big Mouth to Whip It.
Yeah, freaks go out at night.
Into
working in a gold mine. That's right.
Well, Salmon contest.
That's right, working in a gold mine. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Troy.
Hey, this is Secret Million Champion Troy Brown. I love weird 80s mod rock. So today, I am Troy George. Gnarly.
Like, that's when he knew. Like, that was another one that he almost even hit, that he hit the notes on that one.
I'm going to look at Troy Brown a little differently this morning, I think.
You're going to look at him in that pink sweater.
I know. I'm going to remember that picture for a while.
I'm a deus. Oh, Amadeus. Come on and rock me, I'm a deus. Oh, Amadeus. Come on and rock me, Amadeus.
I think he's lying. And I don't say that to insult him. I think his heart's in the right place. He's trying to look out for his former team, his soon-to-be former teammate, Malcolm Butler. I totally get where he's coming from, but I don't believe him for 1 second. I saw Malcolm Butler on that sideline crying while the national anthem was being played. We were told that he learned right before then that he wouldn't be playing. I believe that if Malcolm Butler had known all along that he wasn't going to be playing all week long, I think that Teddy Bruschi would have known that. I think that Willie McGinnis would have known that. I think there's a plethora of former Patriots who would have known that. I think that Rowe, who replaced him, would have talked about that in the locker room post-game after they lost the Super Bowl. He would have mentioned that.
This is Al Horford.
Al Horford. That is not Al Horford, but this is indeed Toucher and Rich.
Wrong take by Al Horford there.
I know. He sounds a lot like Stephen A. Smith. But this Malcolm Butler story is something that I would think by now I would be over. I'm not. It's one of the biggest sports blunders, second-guessing, what-the-hell-happened situations, and it came from a guy that you are, up to this point, not really allowed to question because he's got such a pristine track record. Bill Belichick is the one guy that if you ever came on the air and you said anything negative about him, he had an army of people defending him for good reason. He's earned that. But in this case, not a lot of defenders for what he did, leaving Malcolm Butler on the sidelines. And I think to make everyone feel better, if everyone's trying to find out whether or not it was some sort of punishment for something he did wrong during the week. There were stories about him getting in fights with coaches, and Steve Belichick's a big one that keeps getting thrown out there, and there's no evidence that supports any of that. Malcolm Butler has come out and denied all of it, and then you had people liking his Instagram posts supporting him, and then people liking Instagram posts that were against Bill Belichick for benching him from ex-players like Brandon Browner. So it has been just a strange story because nobody at this point, and I said this earlier, you would think something would have leaked out.
By now?
By now, something would have leaked out.
For sure.
And the fact that it's so ironclad is interesting. However, Ryan Dunleavy, who writes for NJ.com, did get to sit down and speak with Devin McCourty this weekend, and a very interesting conversation about who knew what when, what actually happened behind the scenes with the benching of Malcolm Butler. And we welcome Ryan to the... we welcome Ryan to the show. What's up, Ryan? Good morning.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Hey, what's up? I didn't know if we had a sponsor for the call in line. I guess not yet. So there you go, sponsors. If you want to get in on this, let's do it.
Good.
So, Ryan, first of all, how did this conversation come about between you and Devin McCourty?
I mean, I've known Devin for a long time. My background is covered Rutgers. I'm the Giants beat writer now, but I covered Rutgers for 7 years. Obviously, Rutgers and the Patriots have a deep history, as you guys know. Mm-hmm. So, I was at his fundraiser back at Rutgers Football Stadium this past weekend, talking to him about, all things Tackle Sickle Cell, which is his charity, and then, some Patriot stuff. Greg Schiano, obviously, the rumors with maybe he was going to be the new defensive coordinator, Josh McDaniels' return, and Malcolm Butler. And just asked him basically what he thought about Butler's benching and, you know, Butler heading to free agency, and obviously his comments kind of took on a life of their own.
Okay, so what did he tell you and about what happened the week ahead of time and what they knew about Butler's status?
So it really struck me as Devin trying to stick up for one of his teammates, right? I mean, Butler's going into free agency. McCourty went through free agency 2 years ago. Obviously, I think Devin has one of the cleanest reputations around in the NFL. And he doesn't like the idea that, Malcolm's character is being, questioned left or right, and it could all end up costing him millions of dollars in free agency. So it seemed like he really wanted to get across the message that, you know, whatever you've heard, not as far as he knows, nothing, you know, he was there, like he said, I was there all week. And I was like, yeah, I know you were there all week, Dev. You better have been. Nothing happened with Butler. There was no curfew. You know, we've all read. He didn't single it out. Actually, he did single out the team curfew, said he didn't break team curfew or any of that other stuff. And when he said any of that other stuff, you know, talking about the anonymous reports concert, I mean, I think there were reports, as you guys mentioned, of him getting into arguments with coaches like Steve Belichick, who also is a Rutgers grad, who, you know, I'm sure McCourty wouldn't have sided with Butler over Belichick if there was truth to that. Or I think Brandon Browner had posted something about possible drugs or any of that. Devin didn't get into any of that. He just said other stuff, curfew and other stuff, and just said there was no truth to any of that as far as he knew. So to me, I thought that was important. I thought that was an important distinction that he, was saying there. Basically, he didn't say nothing happened here weeks ago, or, you know, Butler didn't do anything that didn't deserve it or whatever. He just said that whole week nothing happened.
Okay, so there's that side of it, and once he threw that out there, then the question goes to football reasons, and that's the thing that's been thrown around by Bill Belichick, by everyone, by Matt Patricia, is that that was the reason that he didn't play. When did Devin McCourty say that he knew that the plan to start the game, that Malcolm Butler was not going to be starting at the Super Bowl?
Yeah, and I think you just made a really important distinction there that I've been trying to make to some people on social media. You guys obviously picked up on it. He said he knew all week, and it wasn't a secret to the guys on the team, that Malcolm Butler wasn't starting. He didn't say he didn't know he wasn't playing or he wasn't going to take a single snap. He said he knew all week that Malcolm Butler wasn't starting. I didn't elaborate on what that, you know, on did he know that that he wasn't going to take a snap. Maybe I should have. But he said he knew that Malcolm Butler wasn't going to be starting. And I think I know Devin and your audience, you guys probably know him well enough to know, smart guy, 7-year team captain, pretty picks his words carefully, as most Patriots players do up there. So he said wasn't going to be starting, and he said he knew it all week. Is there a chance he's a little more clued in than someone like, I don't know, Eric Rowe? I know he said he didn't know it right up before kickoff. Yeah, there's a chance for sure. I mean, Devin McCourty's a 7-year team captain. If you don't think he's probably a little more involved with the game plan and with, as kind of Matt Patricia's right-hand man on the team, I'm sure that would be naive. I'm sure McCourty's a little more involved than most people.
So just to clarify, you think that explains the disconnect between Eric Rowe Super Bowl night and McCourty a couple of weeks after the fact with you? The disconnect there between Rowe's answer and McCourty is that McCourty saying, we knew he wasn't going to start. We weren't quite sure where it was going to go after that.
Yeah, I think there's two things, which is one, the distinction between not starting and not playing, and two, the fact that, you know, McCourty is probably more clued in than most guys on that defense, at least, you know, a week out of the game plan.
Did you talk to McCourty at all, Ryan, about what he ultimately thought of not putting him in at all during the game defensively?
I didn't. It was pretty clear. Yeah, I don't have a quote for you on it, but it was pretty clear. You know how you're doing an interview and you get a feel for it? It was pretty clear. He was not questioning the decision to put him in. I mean, the guys that question Belichick's decisions get traded to Cleveland, right?
Sure. right. Yeah, if you're smart, you keep your mouth shut. No, you're right. You're absolutely right. Well, that's why the Hightower thing shocked me, is that Hightower liking the Brandon Browner post, and you know, you just said it. You speak out against Bill Belichick, you know, things most of the time don't end well with you as far as you remaining a member of the Patriots, yet Hightower is highly regarded on that team. What do you think as far as him being one of the guys who, you know, via social media spoke out against the choice to keep him out? What do you think that means for Hightower?
I don't know. It's a good question, right? I mean, as far as I know, what, he only liked the post, right? He only
it's a pretty damning post, though, you know, to give thumbs up to that.
Yeah, it is. I don't know. It's a good question. I mean, I think there's probably a lot of guys in that locker room, and this is just me speculating from, you know, a couple hundred miles away.
Sure.
You know, there's obviously a lot of guys in that locker room aren't used to losing, and they were probably pretty shocked to lose that game. They were probably pretty frustrated that, you know, hey, made believe Malcolm, as Malcolm Butler said at the end of the game, he could have made a difference in that game. So I believe there's probably a lot of guys there who, you know, all things aside, brotherhood, family, all that kind of stuff, who wanted their guy out there to get the ring, and don't really care, you know, if there is truth to, you know, that he missed a curfew violation, or is truth to that he, you know, snapped at a coach or whatever. Probably to those guys, it's not a big enough deal to cost them a Super Bowl ring and all the glory that comes with it.
Well, Ryan, you said that you mentioned, asked him about a couple other things. Did he talk about the Josh McDaniels situation and what he thought of how everything went down?
He did, actually. It was actually a pretty funny line. Devin said that, he was politically correct with it. He said, you know, whatever's best for McDaniels, that's what he wants. And then actually he had a great line where he said that, I've built a great relationship with McDaniels, even though I'm on the other side of the ball. We joke around quite a bit. I'm excited to have him back. We laugh and joke all the time. I probably won't get on him about this, though, but I'll get on him about some other stuff.
Oh, very, very nice.
So pretty funny line, and just clearly he was happy to have McDaniels decide to come back.
Well, it's definitely been a weird couple of weeks since the Super Bowl's been over, and this story isn't going away, and, you know, you've actually stoked the flame a little bit around here, and...
I was surprised. I was surprised by, I guess the reaction to it even two weeks out, and I'm surprised no one's gotten to the bottom yet of exactly what's happened, because I think that goes to the secrecy of the Patriots organization and the tight lip. And maybe I think there's a natural inclination among sports reporters, newspaper guys, radio guys, TV guys, not to believe anything, right? And it's just impossible to believe that it would be because of football reasons.
I got a weird feeling once free agency and contracts are signed and once those things and things are written in ink.
And once Butler finds another team to play for, I think we find out everything.
Then you might start finding out the truth. But right now, everyone's being a good soldier because all their vested interest says, hey, if you want to make some money, you keep your mouth shut. Or if you want to keep your roster spot on a certain team, you keep your mouth shut. And so, maybe time will tell. It is shocking that we have not found out yet. But Ryan, good stuff. And thanks for calling in this morning, man. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
All right, thanks, man. It still doesn't add up, and I'm still fascinated by it, and I don't care what anyone says. This story is, and now there's all of these angles about, and I heard Stephen A. Smith say it, and I like Stephen A. Smith. I find him very funny, but sometimes he just says stuff to rile people up. But he made a point about whether or not this is going to affect free agents coming to the New England Patriots because of the way that Malcolm Butler, he believes, was treated by Bill Belichick, whether it was a situation where it was straight up to embarrass him on the biggest stage. There's an argument to be made. I don't think that that's ultimately the case. You still come to the Patriots if you want to win.
Yeah, you don't come to be appreciated.
I understand that. But what if there's another place that you could still win, but you feel like you could be embarrassed potentially by Bill Belichick in the same way that Malcolm Butler was? It does, for the very first time, make you question. I mean, it is the worst coaching decision that Bill Belichick has ever made as a coach of the New England Patriots. Do we all agree with that? Benching Malcolm Butler during the Super Bowl?
In-game decision? Yeah.
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 It's the worst coaching decision he has made, and it's so bad. And the biggest stage to make a decision like that.
It's the first one that's really cost him a big game.
It rocks your belief in whether the Belichick way is... I mean, it's the first time that you've seen like a little crack in the armor. So we will talk a little bit about that. Stephen A. Smith was kind of funny when he was dressed it, and so much more. Also, I saw Black Panther this weekend. We will do a quick review of that right after John Wallach's headlines.
Stay tuned for more Toucher and Rich on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
105 is Sports Hub. It's Toucher and Rich, and the previous CBS Sports Minute was brought to you by South Shore Bank. Be listening this morning at 7:50 for your chance to score a pair of tickets to see the Bruins play Pittsburgh. It's a big game. Thursday, March 1st at the Garden. That's coming up in less than 10 minutes. Got out to go see Black Panther this weekend. I guess I was the only one. Taking a look at the box office. And
did it set all the records it was supposed to?
Oh, even bigger. I'm not kidding you. Like, I mean, it was enormous. It made it's heading towards a $235 million four-day debut.
Jeez.
Which is insane. God. It's the fifth largest opening of all time. Fifth largest. I mean, think of like, wow. I mean, that's like including Star Wars.
Yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah.
I mean, that is massive. And trying to get a seat when I went, like, one of the best things that theaters have done in the last like 5 years or so is reserve seats. It's the greatest thing ever. You don't have to stand in line and wait to get, I mean, you're sitting with your necks looking up at the screen if you show up, you know, 20 minutes beforehand on opening night. This way, it's awesome. You show up right on time, sit down. But I couldn't find a good reserve seat a week beforehand. And I had like kind
at
of
like multiple theaters or like at your theater, like your go-to.
Like there's like three go-tos that I've got. And at any of them on Friday night, like, I mean, I got,
couldn't find it anywhere.
A pretty crappy seat, but I was able to get in, but it was one of the few seats that was left on Friday night, and it was absolutely packed. I mean, every showing, I mean, obviously you made $235 million in 4 days. So, I mean, this comes on the heels of the best reviews I've seen for a movie. I can't think of a movie that's gotten this much buzz. As far, there were people reporting that they were crying at the end of it. Whatever I heard people call this the new Star Wars. Like, take away that it's part of the whole Marvel universe. There's like a whole world that you can build around the Black Panther universe. Like, there's characters that you could build side stories on and make entire movies, stuff like this. I mean, it was talked up massively. And I never want to judge a movie by saying it was overrated, because, you know, when you go in like that, I want to judge it because there's no way any of the praise could, it couldn't live up to that praise.
Right.
It's the best praise I've seen for a movie
since Jack and Jill.
Since Jack and Jill, yeah. With Adam Sandler. Yeah. Which, by the way, I think, yeah, we had Norm MacDonald on our show who's in that movie, and he crapped on that film,
yeah,
before it even came out. So good for him. But so I went I saw it. Now, first of all, it's getting a lot of praise for the right reason. The right reason is that it is really cool that a movie that has a predominantly black cast, predominantly black director, and most of the people working behind the scenes comes out and is a massive smash. And it shows that that's a market that has not been tapped into, and they can continue. You can make good movies if you put quality people around the product. That's great. And on top of that, there's, you know, it's getting a lot of praise for there being strong female characters. That's great as well. Now, take all of that away. Take all of the praise for the reasons that are the social reasons, whatever. I understand that. And just as a movie, I thought it was fine. Marvel has a bar that is so damn high. They just continue to hit it out of the park over and over and over again. It's gotten to the point where, like, a Marvel movie will come out and, like, they'll make a concerted effort to change the tone of the next one so none of them seem the same. Like, the new Thor movie that came out, they said, you know what? We've kind of done this before where, you know, Thor's one of the more serious characters. Let's get a guy known for making ridiculously funny, corny, goofy movies. This director did, like, you know, What We Do in the Shadows, that vampire movie, and let's give him a big budget and see what he does with Thor, and it's a smash hit, and people love it because it's goofy, it's tongue-in-cheek. They did that with, like, Doctor Strange. They said, let's go all in on the visual effects in this one. And they got some of the most breakthrough visual effects that you've seen when they came out with that. Spider-Man Homecoming. Let's make one that's a little more kid-friendly. Let's make this one kind of like the one you can bring the whole family to. And the tone was completely different. Yet each one seems to be a mega hit and gets reviewed. Like, when's the last stinker that Marvel came out with? Can you think of the last one that was just like an absolute dud, other than Fantastic Four, but that was a different studio? I think, yeah, it was like Sony who did that. So I sat down and watched it. Now, there's really no memorable action scenes in it. That's the one thing. Black Panther's not even really that great of a, like, the superpowers aren't really even that great.
I was going to ask,
he's got a cool suit that, like, when you hit it, like, the energy, like, it captures the energy, and then it can hit you back with the same amount of power. But that, I say, Iron Man's got a pretty cool suit, too, and it shoots lasers.
Like a rubber.
And he can fly.
Like a rubber.
Computer operated.
Right.
Yeah.
I'd say, as far as suits are concerned, I'd much rather have that one.
Yeah.
Right. You know, the where they live in Wakanda, that's kind of a cool area. But once again, and I hate judging it this way, I was sold that this is like a new Star Wars. It just looks like a really cool country in Africa with, like, nice buildings. It's really not. I was a little disappointed in that part of it. The bad guys, pretty good. He's pretty damn good. It's Michael B. Jordan, the guy who was in Creed. He played Apollo Creed's son.
Yeah.
He's a really good actor.
He's in like every Ryan Coogler movie,
Yeah, he is. Which, by the way, Ryan Coogler, the director of this, you know, he's got a nice little track record going. He did that Fruitvale Station, which kicked ass, and that was good. Creed, which was excellent. And then there's this one, which, once again, is not a bad movie. But I sat down, I was thinking about it. I was like, okay, people are saying this is the best comic book movie of all time. And it's not just like one or two people. Like, a lot of people are saying this is the best comic book movie of all time. Now, we're not even going to talk about The Dark Knight, because The Dark Knight's the best comic book movie of all time. Maybe even a top five movie of all time, in my opinion. I loved The Dark Knight. It's borderline perfect in every way. I know this because Nick Jamelli, who's sitting to my left, almost lost his job by wanting to go see The Dark Knight.
Yes.
He was so obsessed with that dumb movie.
That was like, what, 10 years ago?
Allegedly.
But I always find
I can't find that shirt anywhere. Because I'm moving right now. I can't find it.
That's right. That was, man, just real quick, Adam, I don't know if you know the story. So Nick was obsessed with The Dark Knight when it was coming out. And he was an intern back in the day. And like, he was going on scavenger hunts to watch the trailer. Like, I mean, the studio was doing all this crazy stuff and he was obsessed. So on the night of the screening, like, this is when we were on from 2 to 6. We used to be on in the afternoon. Yeah. I'm sorry, 3 to 7 they had moved us. The screening was at 7. So I was going to leave early, and so was Nick at 6 o'clock to go to the screening. So 6 o'clock rolls around and I go to leave and we say, Nick, you can go only if you properly finish this game of operation and don't let any of the buzzers go off. The minute you do that, you can leave. But if a buzzer goes off, you have to start back over again. And he sat there like he was going to cry. And I was like, all right, just kidding. You can go. Like, I was,
do you remember who was in studio that day, too?
It was Caliendo.
Yep.
Yeah, Caliendo was in studio
play
that
play
day.
He's
doing play-by-play of you screwing up on operation. I do. Right, it's John Madden. So I wrote down, I'm like, okay, it's kind of middle-of-the-pack Marvel, which is still good, but movies that are better. There's no character in the new Black Panther that's as interesting as Groot or Rocket. I mean, like, Guardians of the Galaxy's better. Spider-Man Homecoming, I thought was a better movie. Captain America Civil War might be the best of all of them. Iron Man, The Avengers, Doctor Strange, Spider-Man 2. If you want to go way back, I mean, well, first of all, Logan was better. Logan was excellent. X2, if you want to go DC, you can go... I liked X2. Not a lot of people did.
I was going to say,
I liked it.
I've seen like none of these.
And I'm one of the few. You haven't seen any of those? Avengers?
I've seen like none of these.
Okay. Dude, what are you doing? What are you doing, man?
Well, we're doing, a lot of... A lot of Bruins recaps.
What are you doing?
Your random revolution recap.
That's a good point.
So it's middle of the road. Like, it's better than a lot of the Thors. I thought it was better than, like, I think it's better than Deadpool. I thought Deadpool was, like, a little Deadpool goes a long way. I'm one of the people in the minority, though. People freaking love that movie. I thought it was fine. But, yeah, I give it 3 out of 5. It was very good. But, I mean, like... It's one of those movies that I think as time goes by and we get away from what it meant, which is obviously very cool and amazing and very important that, you know, this was as successful as it was, and you just step back and watch it as a movie, it's going to be less watchable than the other ones. It's one that you're just like, okay, it was fun. It's not really that funny. You know, there's not really a lot of funny stuff. It's not the funny movie. It didn't take itself too seriously, but it wasn't
so
funny.
Aside from the social impact of it, you said everyone has a different feel, a different vibe. Like, what is the vibe? As a movie, what is the vibe?
Well, I thought this one was the political one. And I didn't have any problem with the political message. As a matter of fact, I thought some of the messages in it were great. Like, I mean, one of the guys, you know, he's like a kid whose father, you know, is killed. And, you know, it's about, like, you know, in the African-American community, people growing up without fathers, how it affects their life, as opposed to somebody who did grow up with a father and how their lives go in different directions. That part of it was very cool. And I thought that was the best part of the movie, to be quite honest. Like, the message they tried to throw in there, because it was done very well. But the actual fun part, the comic book part, the part that we kind of go to get our rocks off and, you know.
Not so much.
It was fine. It was fine. Black Panther isn't that great of a character. It's just not. He's just a guy with a suit who, like, you know, eats some plant and is being able to jump real high. Other than that, you know, it's like...
I mean, that sounds cool.
It's a cool suit.
The suit's pretty cool.
It's a cool suit.
The suit's pretty cool. You know, Captain America's not even that great of a character, if you ask me. So he's kind of like Captain America. Like, you know, one's got a cool shield, one's got a cool suit.
Yeah,
and eats some plants.
And eats like cool plants that make him trip balls.
Nice.
So, you know, and you know, jump real high.
Now we're talking.
He tripped balls. Remember when they buried him? He's like tripping balls.
Oh, that's right.
Okay, so what did you think, Nick? Because Nick saw it this weekend, too.
I thought it was good. I thought it was, there was so much hype building up to it.
I'm not going to fault it for that, but right. I mean, it's over the top. It's really over the top, the hype this movie's getting. Once again, I'm not going to hate it for it. And a lot of it's warranted as far as what it meant. But the movie itself, you step back and you're like, yeah, it's fine.
It was good. Cool. I mean, I thought the bad guys were really, really good. Michael B. Jordan and the guy who does Gollum, they were great in it. And but overall, just leaving the movie theater, I just thought it was a good movie. It wasn't my favorite Marvel movie. Guardians of the Galaxy is my favorite all-time Marvel movie, but it was good. It was good.
Yeah, I even like Ant-Man better, I think. Ant-Man was a good movie.
That was weird.
Ant-Man's better than Black Panther?
Yeah, I thought Ant-Man was better.
That feels controversial, but again, I've seen neither.
Yeah, Ant-Man at least had the giant Thomas train that exploded through a house and landed on the front yard. Like, that was funny. Like, there was visual things that I'll remember and go, oh, that was a great scene. Black Panther, the action scenes, like, there's nothing memorable from it. He's got a suit. It's kind of cool.
Eat some plants.
That's really about it. And he eats plants and make him trip balls. All right. Soundtrack to Black Panther is all right.
Is that what this is?
Yeah, this is from the movie. You know what's weird though is that as much talk, by the way, it's 98.5 of Sports, I'm Touch Rich, as much talk as the soundtrack was getting, and it's I think the top selling album right now, is that you hardly hear this unless it's the scene where they happen to walk into like a club. Because it's all like, you know, regular like, you know, movie music. And
yeah,
it's,
yeah.
You know, but it's one of those movies where the big songs in it, you hear like for like 3 seconds or 4 seconds. It's not like a massive scene where, oh, yeah, like a Tarantino movie where it takes over the scene or anything like that. It's just like every once in a while someone's driving by and you hear it.
A little background noise.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. So as much credit as the soundtrack's getting, you're not going to hear those songs a whole hell of a lot when you see the movie. And by the way, there's nothing better than when people yell at you, my favorite movie is not your favorite movie, which is always good.
What, they're criticizing you for your opinion?
No. A lot of people who saw Black Panther aren't disagreeing with me. And I didn't, by the way,
I just picture a lot of Ant-Man fans really having your back out there.
No. Like, I remember, X2? You know, how could you like that? I'm like, all right, man, we disagree on movies. Once again, Black Panther's a good movie. Like, if you see it, you're not going to have a bad time. It's just that it's just middle of the pack. It's middle of the pack Marvel. And I think that there's a lot of people who are, and I'm talking just from you should probably see it because it is kind of a pop culture moment. You know, you're going to look back and everyone's going to remember Black Panther because of it's this huge success and it's this predominantly, it shows that you can have a predominantly black cast in a major motion picture that is a like a Hollywood blockbuster, and it can be a massive boom. Like, it can be a huge windfall. And I think that that's obviously something that's very cool. But from a pure entertainment aspect, people are going to look back on it and go, all right, maybe we kind of took that part of it and swept it up with our review of what we actually thought of the film itself, because it's just fine. It's good. It's all right. It ain't Ant-Man, which, once again, has got people yelling at me. Ant-Man. I thought it was good.
Well, you know, you got
that was all right.
You got a lot of Ant-Man support out there, I imagine.
That Paul Rudd, he's a hunk. All right, 617-779-0985. We will get to, there's a bunch of stuff going on right now with the Red Sox.